Grace and peace to each of you in the love of Jesus Christ as we gather today in this place. Leaning into darkness. It is a gift and always a privilege to introduce Brian Martin Burkholder. I consider him both a friend and a colleague. We have collaborated on many things over the years. And I'd like to have him come into this community from time to time to share with us because he is the campus pastor for the university. He also is the director of the campus ministries, and he's also a spiritual director. So he's going to invite us into paying attention to the rhythm of the darkness in our lives as it continues to emerge in ways unseen in the Spirit of God. For orientation, I invite you just to look at the first question down below under the moment of response. When has God seemed absent or obscure in your experience? Sit with that for a moment. When has God seemed absent or obscure in your experience? The psalmist says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn and if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me and your right hand hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me. Even darkness will not be dark to you. The night shall shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." Let's continue in that awareness.
Exodus 14, 5 through 12. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the minds of Pharaoh and his officials were changed toward the people, and they said, "What have we done, letting Israel leave our service?" So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 picked chariots and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the Israelites who were going out boldly. The Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, his chariot drivers and his army. They overtook them camped by the sea, by Pi Hahiroth, in front of Baal Zephon. As Pharaoh drew near, the Israelites looked back, and there were the Egyptians advancing on them. In great fear, the Israelites cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the very thing we told you in Egypt? Let us alone, and let us serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness."
Thank you. Mark 15:16-34. Then the soldiers led him into the courtyard of the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters, and they called together the whole cohort, and they clothed him in a purple cloak. And after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him. And they began saluting him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They struck his head with a reed, spat upon him, and knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him.
They compelled a passerby who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. It was Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus. Then they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of a skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide what each should take.
It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by derided him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." In the same way, the chief priests, along with the scribes, were also mocking him among themselves and saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. Let the Messiah, the King of Israel, come down from the cross now so that we may see and believe." Those who were crucified with him also taunted him.
When it was noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. At 3 o'clock, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?"
I'm likely a little unusual, but certainly not alone in my appreciation for the dark. I feel good in black clothing, though I didn't wear it today. I like nighttime, black cats, black dogs, stargazing on dark nights, darker skin, darker hair, black licorice. When I worked at a Christian camp and retreat center in Michigan, I led many night hikes and learned to prefer walking outdoors in the dark without a flashlight. Embracing the darkness, relying on the moonlight, and my developing night vision instead of artificial light. You might say that darkness has grown on me through the years because I haven't always liked the darkness. As a child, I used to dash upstairs from our dark basement, sure that there were skunks and various forms of monster living there. And our neighborhood friends would come most every evening, for blocks of time at least, at dusk to play ghost in the graveyard in our woods and lawn. And I didn't exactly feel brave pensively walking down the wooded path into the woods, expecting a fright most any second. And further, the few Halloween haunted houses and haunted forests or horror movies I experienced with high school friends affirmed my growing suspicion that being outdoors after dark was frightening. Many of us have been taught to be afraid of the dark. Darkness takes other forms as well, perceptions of dark and light skin inform systems of racism in the U.S. and in many other cultures. And some use the descriptor dark for things sinister or evil. Certainly such language is used in a spiritual sense. And this morning I want to dig a little deeper into this area of emphasis. In common Christian teaching, generally speaking, dark is bad and light is good. And this kind of darkness is undesirable and to be avoided. Instead, we are taught to walk in the light. Walk in the light of Christ. Indeed, Jesus described himself as the light of the world in the I am statements in the Gospel of John. Listen to John 8, verse 12. Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. A fairly recent hymn text from poet David Wright from Chicago in the song, Come, Walk in the Light. It's in Sing the Story. It's number 10. He urges us as a collective people to walk in God's light. Here are these verses he wrote, inspired primarily from Scripture. In the days ahead, the nations will stream to the house of the Holy One. Many peoples will turn to God. They will learn God's ways and walk in God's light. Let the mountains be laden with God's peace and the hills be filled with justice, like showers that water the earth. Let God's light rain on the valleys and the fields. O God, Lord of hosts, how long? How long, O Lord, will you be angry with our prayers? Will you feed us the bread of our tears? Restore us. Let us walk again in your light. Lift your eyes, arise, shine. Your light has come. Now you will see and be radiant. The brightness of the dawn is here. God makes the way clear. Come, walk in the light. Well, with few exceptions in Christian hymnody, although Matt found one of the exceptions as the opening song, he's that good, we're taught to avoid darkness in our spiritual and faithful journeys and embrace light. And don't get me wrong, I am all for walking in the light, God's light, the light of Christ, and the light of the world. That's my life. It's just that sometimes we don't. It's just that sometimes we can't. And at points along life's journey, we find that the light has gone out. With all this distrust of and resistance to dark and darkness, imagine my intrigue with the emphasis of a seminary Summer Institute for Spiritual Formation course that I was about to take, the final course for my training in spiritual direction. The course was titled Seasons of Impasse, Dark Night of the Soul, Professor Kevin Clark. I was strangely drawn to exploring this form of darkness in a Christian context. It seemed like a foreign language in the Christian context of my upbringing. The concept of dark night of the soul is widely accepted to have originated with John of the Cross, a 16th century monk who began writing his best-known work by the same title, The Dark Night of the Soul, while being held in a monastery prison for 11 months. Barbara Brown Taylor, in her book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, explains dark night in contemporary language. Hear this quote from her. Like darkness itself, the dark night of the soul means different things to different people. Some use the phrase to describe the time following a great loss, while others remember it as a time leading up to a difficult decision. Whatever the circumstances, what the stories have in common is their description of a time when the soul was severely tested, often to the point of losing faith, by circumstances beyond all control. No one chooses the dark night. The dark night descends. And when it does, the reality that troubles the soul most is the apparent absence of God. If God is light, then God is gone. There's no soft, glowing space of safety in this dark night. There's no comforting sound coming out of it, reassuring the soul that all will be well. End quote. Now, most authors of spiritual direction and spiritual guidance speak of the dark night experience as an individual spiritual dynamic, but communities can experience that of the dark night of the soul as well. Maybe entire cultures and societies. The biblical example is from the Exodus of the Israelites out of slavery to Pharaoh. This is where communal self-identity, self-perception, and shared perceptions of God are exposed for what they oftentimes are: self-serving substitutes for reality and idols for God. We are hopelessly addicted to what we think is true, even when it comes to naming and claiming God. These are hard words for us, perhaps. The Israelites came to the point of trusting Moses and trusting God enough to flee Egypt, thereby fleeing a lifestyle of bondage, only to nearly crumble with fear and cry out as soon as they saw the Egyptians pursuing them. It's understandable they were being pursued, right, by an army. And they said, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us, bringing us out of Egypt? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." It's typical when tasting dark night or being immersed in the dark night of the soul to want things to be like they were. The dismantling of what was is often seemingly too much to bear. What we know, what we think we know, where we were, who we think we were, our personal perceptions of God and how God acts in our lives are what we want, rather than the frightening future that is emerging. And yet, we are taught to trust in God as we move forward. But can we trust in God when God is not there? And the dark night experience is typically an experience of God being absent, or obscure such that God seems absent, at least compared with how we might have experienced God's presence and the action of God in our lives at other times. My personal experience of that of a dark night, not a full dark night of the soul, but something of a dark night, was in the midst of going through a trial of significant depression and anxiety. It's not an omen, but for me, it was in the months following my seminary years. I'm sure transition, loss, and change had something to do with it. The spiritual emptiness I experienced in the midst of this crisis of loss, disorientation, left me unable to pray as I typically would have, but only able to sit in a chair staring out the window into the woods as a form of prayer. I could not worship through song, and I love to sing. I couldn't celebrate life enough, enjoying good food, and I love to eat. I couldn't enjoy life in the company of others, and I love being with people. I could not sleep well, and I did not want to be awake. I could only get through each day by managing myself in a fog of what had been my life. I was lost and frightened and felt empty relationally and spiritually. And at times, I did think death was the only way out of this struggle, though I likely wasn't thinking clearly. And what of Jesus, in the midst of being crucified, Jesus himself experienced a dark night of the soul, or something of a dark night, seemingly having been abandoned by God and finding God to be absent or obscure, such that he called out in anguish from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Let's not rush from the profound nature and dynamic of this anguished question as we so often do. Let's not shield our eyes from the bloodied cross of Christ, looking only to the resurrection for our strength. For some Christian scholars and authors are suggesting that we cannot fully understand and embrace the resurrection without understanding and embracing the cross and crucifixion. We cannot fully live our Christian faith without acknowledging our questions and doubts, without honoring our struggles. We dare not champion a veneered or surface-level faith filled with easy and clear perspectives and answers in lieu of diving deep into a less clear but ever so profound depth of knowing God's heart for us and for the world. Let us be willing and disciplined enough to sit at the cross of Christ and with the dark night of the soul experiences in our own lives and or in the lives of those near and dear to us, perhaps in our congregations, in our families, our friendship circles, and see what there is to learn right there. Again, Barbara Brown Taylor encourages us to reconsider darkness as a teacher. And she mostly means natural darkness, but also darkness experienced on our spiritual journeys. I'm game to take her up on it. Take her up on the challenge, even though I've never fully experienced a dark night of the soul, this imposition of a season of impasse, when God's seemingly absent or obscure enough to seem absent. The fullness of dark night of the soul is not, I want to be clear, not the darkness and emptiness of experiencing emotional depression and anxiety like I did for a season, although there are some similarities in experience. Dark night of the soul is more of a desert wilderness experience of being painfully stripped of our idolic images and perceptions of God, assured belief systems and self-serving addictions, such that a repatterning of a sense of self and of God might emerge and deepen. What is clear to me is the immense gift of such a downward spiritual journey. Something not often affirmed and supported in the church, at least not like it could be. And I imagine that many of you have been or are or sometime will be on this journey as your spiritual life clarifies through loss, struggle, release, and grows in love and freedom in the purity of God being God. And the good news is this: if you or a friend of yours is experiencing a dark night of the soul or dark night dynamics on the spiritual faithful journey of life, and it seems God is absent or you cannot worship or honor God in ways that used to hold meaning for you, know this: God is still active and present in your life. This kind of imposed spiritual darkness holds gift if only there is patience and persistence enough to go through it with awareness and a willingness to release our preconceptions and idolatrous addictions to let God be God in the mystery of all truth and grace. In Psalm 139, verses 7 through 12, returning to where Kevin opened, where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. So in closing, when God seems absent and obscure, God is still inescapable. Active, present, inescapable. But God might not be what or who we have made God out to be. Just as our image of darkness is limited and our teaching around darkness perhaps too limited, our images of God are limited. Yet God's grace abounds. Grace enough for you and you, for you, all of us, for all that each of us faces in our lives amid changing life situations on the journey of letting go. The great news is that through this letting go, we are being released ever more fully into God's love. That's where it's headed. Being released ever more fully into God's love. So thanks be to God for this kind of love. Amen.